Greater Sandton and beyond. Get ready for the Sandton Times Hour.
With your host,
Alexander.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, everyone in between and beyond. Welcome to the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and also available on all leading digital audio channels wherever you are in the world. I'm Alexander Leipner and this is edition 152. It's week 15 of 2024 and it's good to have you with me again. And if you'd like to get in touch, you can send through your questions and your comments or your feedback or whatever else on editor@sandtontimes.co.za. If you want to go open up an email, if you want to connect on social media, you can connect at Sandton Times, whatever your preferred social media platform is, and also connect on the website www.sandtontimes.co.za. And if you're listening live on Mix 93.8 on a Monday night and not at a later stage on some digital platform, well, the WhatsApp line is open for you on 0848220938. That's 0848220938, and I hope you've got that saved on your phone. A special welcome to everyone listening for the very first time. If this is your premiere of the Sandton Times Hour, well, welcome to a very interesting hour indeed. And if you've been listening, as you have every single week and every single month, well, it's good to have you back again. If you're in Johannesburg or Pretoria, across South Africa, and everywhere else in the world, online or on air, I'm happy to report that all is well in Sandton land. And yeah, my trusty left-hand technician, Vincenzo, good to see you again. I see there's you've got two towers in Bologna that are potentially falling over. I saw the story on Deutsche Welle. They were talking about these two towers in Bologna. Do you know those towers? Oh, you've seen them, have you? Okay, well, they're trying to reinforce them. Because they're, I don't know, a few hundred years old or something, but they're starting to lean. But like the Leaning Tower of Pisa, although that's never really fallen over. But these ones look a little bit more risque. Well, last week we had the best of Volume 2 of the Sandton Times Hour, as we enjoyed a wonderful weekend away in the bush. It's always good to get away to the bush. I don't know where you went. Maybe you went to the ocean, to the sea, to the beach. Are you more of a beach person? Or are you more of a let's go out into the bush and let's go look for animals and game drives and gin and tonics at sunset kind of person? Or did you stay at home and have a lack of time at home over the long weekend? Well, whatever you did, I must tell you, I had no cell phone reception, which was actually remarkably relaxing. Not to be connected to news all the time, not to be connected to all kinds of things as we are. We've become so used to it. Oh, but just to be disconnected for a little bit. Gorgeous. Anyway, back again, and this week for a bit of a normal week. So, who are we talking to this week? Well, joining me in just a bit are two of our public representatives here in Greater Sandton to chat about issues pertaining to street vendors and those trading on the sidewalks and at traffic lights in Greater Sandton. Should be an interesting discussion, I think. Then, location, 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 as a controversial yet valuable property has come up for sale in the heart of Sandton. I'll be getting you all the details. So the full story is coming up in the next hour. And finally, how have South Africans been spending this past year? And when I say spending, not like, you know, what have they been doing with their time? No, as in, what have they been doing with their money? Where have they been spending their hard-earned cash that's worth a little bit less this year? Well, an interesting deep dive into the data of some banking clients' credit cards, and all will be revealed in the next hour. Time for a bit of music before we get things rolling. And Vincenzo, can you just take a look in that box in the corner there? I think there's a couple of cassettes there. See if you can dig something up. Maybe you can play us that Acapulco song by, what's his name? Jason Derulo. See if you can find that. And while he does that, let me remind you that you're switched on to the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8.
Promote your brand. Advertise your business.
Our audience could be your next client. Contact the Sandton Times today. The best of talk and music in 1 hour. This is the Sandton Times Hour.
This is the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and also available on all good digital audio platforms wherever you are in the world. If you're into podcasts, make sure you subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and make sure you get the show
on your mobile device or your computer, wherever you are, every single week. As we get this week's show on the road, I'm interested in a very local conversation, very specific to Greater Sandton. And this is with regards to something that I think affects all of us. We've seen them operate on the side of the streets. It's the street hawkers, and they come in all kinds of shapes and forms. I mean, you've got people selling fruits and vegetables, eggs, maguinia. You've got people doing haircuts on the side of the road. You've got them operating at traffic lights. You've got them operating on all kinds of streets in and around Sandton. And there's been some concern around how this works, when it works, why it should work or why it shouldn't work. And here to chat to me about this is Linda Shackelford. She's a Johannesburg Ward Councillor for Ward 103, which includes Sandton, CBD, Morningside, River Club, Bryanston East, Parkmore, and a few more. And Linda, it's good to have you on the Sandton Times Hour.
Thank you very much for having me today and inviting me to have a chat.
Well, it's good. And we're also being joined by Public Relations Councillor Martin Lowe, who's on the Section 79 Committee, the Economic Development Committee. Martin, also good to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Great. Well, Linda, let's kick this off with just setting a bit of an introduction or a bit of context to the story. So there was a specific incident outside the St. John's United Church, which prompted, I suppose, this entire conversation around street vendors and how they operate. Maybe you can just give us a bit of a bit of background.
About a month ago, it was reported to me that a barber had set up on the corner of Pam Road and Bemmel Road, and he was operating directly outside the church. And it had been fine for a while, but unfortunately, it had been reported to me that someone else had joined him. So the business was growing. And unfortunately, from what residents let me know, is they had now become a gathering of people on the corner of the road, especially residents who walk in the area, who walk to the shops from the different flats to Benmore and all of that. And now the public urinating had started and all of that, and it was getting worse. And a lot of the residents just didn't feel safe walking to the shops past this area. So it was reported and then escalated and sent through to JMPD to ask them to move on.
Right. I mean, hawkers in general in big cities are not uncommon. We're also familiar with buskers in places like London and Vienna, etc. But there has to be some sort of regulation as to how this works. As you say, you have somebody who starts a business that does become successful and it ends up expanding, but it can't expand necessarily on the sidewalks of Johannesburg because there's all kinds of things you have to take into consideration. What are the processes that people have to follow to be able to do these things, and where can they do them?
So there are different kinds of informal traders or hawkers on the side of the corner of the roads. And it's very hard to determine who's who, unfortunately, at the moment. So there are permits that people can get, and there are informal licenses that can get. You get the caravan people who sell food and all of that. They have to actually go through the region and contact the Environmental Health Department and get a COC and to identify where they want to trade, because there are certain areas that you can and can't trade, especially when it comes to food and cooking and all of that, and especially the fact that they can't have open fires. So that's the one section. Then we get the barbers, and which is a different kind of trade, but that's also still a health trade. So they would also have to still go to environmental health, say they wanted to trade, where they wanted to trade, and get a certification. When it comes to the other traders, like wire art, and I would say just the lady with the scones, those sort of side of it. I mean, the scones is also environmental health, but wire art is just street selling. The street selling, there are different sort of ways that I've been told. The first is to go to JMPD and to just identify where you're wanting to sell. Unfortunately, most of these people selling wire art and everything are rather pushed to go and sell it flea markets and more established areas, because they end up being on the side of the road, which is within 5 meters of an intersection, which is a big problem. After they've been to JMPD, they're then advised to go to the Economic Development Department in town. All this detail is on the City of Joburg website, and they pay a tariff, and they can actually then identify a site and get a permit to where they want to trade. But it is formalized, and they need to do it. I know Martin will come in on a bit of there's a new policy coming in that's been in the works for a while, because the trading, the system doesn't work as well as we would like. at the moment in the city for the traders to get licenses. But there is one at the moment, and they do need to go and get their permits and carry their permits and follow the rules.
All right. Well, this is a conversation we're having with Linda Shackelford and Martin Lowe, talking about the street vendors in and around Greater Sandton and some of the issues that have emerged. And it's not just about an irritation factor. It's also a matter of public health. If you're selling food, if you're offering some sort of service, or if you're selling goods, you need to make sure that these are done within a parameter of the law. And we're going to continue this conversation in just a minute. We're going to take a quick break and more on this right after this.
Follow the Sandton Times on social media.
At Sandton Times.
You're listening to the Sandton Times Hour.
You're listening to the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8, and I'm in conversation with Linda Shackelford. She's the Johannesburg Ward Councillor for Ward 103, and I've also got Public Relations Councillor Martin Lowe of the Section 79 Economic Development Committee. And just before the break, we were chatting about the permits required by street vendors, people who are operating in and around Greater Sandton on the streets, offering services, offering goods, and that there is a process that needs to be followed. And there have been some concerns raised around how some of these businesses are operating, and that they need to have some sort of regulation. Martin, there was some chat about some new policy that is being formulated just before the break. Do you want to just touch on that?
Yeah, and Alex, before I do, I think it's important for everybody to realize that we need to actually balance commerce in a free market economy with some sorts of regulation. You know, we can't have people who, as was indicated earlier, have, for instance, a hair salon on the street right outside a hair salon, which is actually paying taxes and paying salaries and what have you. You know, so there needs to be a balance in that regard. There has been a new policy in the offing now for over 10 years, if you can believe that. So it doesn't mean to say that there's no policy at the moment which regulates these types of people who want to conduct their business. But there has been a policy which involved public participation. And this has just dragged on and on and on for, I kid you not, over 10 years. I think we're all a little bit up in the air at the moment as to, you know, what the policy is going to be. And also with regards to the enforcement. And, you know, I think I also need to mention at this stage that it's unfortunate that when there has been enforcement of the bylaw management unit by the JMBD, they have sometimes been a little bit heavy-handed, and that hasn't gone down well. And in fact, that's ostracized the city from the people who are trying to conduct business. But just one or two other points that I need to mention is that, you know, while it's all good and well to allow people to conduct business, this has to be regulated. And then we need to take into things into account, like the selling of illicit or illegal goods, counterfeit goods, for example. We can't countenance that. You know, that doesn't provide for good commerce for the country. So we've got to take all that into consideration when we're looking at these things and considering, you know, how to enforce them as well.
So, Martin, if I'm understanding you correctly, it's a little bit of a two-way street. On the one hand, it's a matter of the hawkers or those who want to conduct some sort of trade that is considered informal coming along and getting the necessary paperwork or following the necessary procedures. But on the other side, on the city side, there's also some issues in terms of issuing those licenses or issuing those permits.
No, Alex, my understanding is that there's not so much of an issue about issuing the permits, about actually providing the permits, should the person qualify for whatever permit it is that they're applying for. It's about the fact that a lot of people don't apply for them. There's a lot of people who just conduct business willy-nilly as they please, where they please, without any regulation, without any formalization. And, you know, then it's like street signs. You know, if they get out of control, you can have a thousand street signs along a street, which really detracts then from what is going on in that street. And I want to suggest that maybe street vendors, or call them whatever you want, you know, can provide the same type of distraction. And also then, as was mentioned by Linda, where we've got narrow pavements, you can't have people occupying or preoccupying a large section of the pavement and forcing people out into the road in that regard. But, you know, it really just goes back to, if people comply with the laws, they will be able to get a permit. If they don't, then JMPD is going to come down against them in terms of forcing the bylaw management units.
Yeah. Linda had a referenced you know, some businesses that are within a certain parameter of the or in close proximity to traffic lights. What about those people conducting businesses at traffic lights? I mean, we've seen it move from super glue and caps and sunglasses to, you know, circus acts. I mean, there's music performers, jugglers, beer crate dancers. I mean, we've got the full spectrum.
So, you know, Alex, again, you know, we've got to look at the balance now. You know, I wouldn't say, isn't this kind of unique for South Africa? And isn't this just the beauty about South Africa and the country that we live in, that these types of things can happen, that you can actually go shopping at the traffic lights?
Yes.
Unfortunately, though, and be entertained at the traffic lights while you're waiting for the lights to change. Unfortunately, it is illegal. You know, these people shouldn't be there. And what also has happened is that the criminals have followed these people who are selling and have taken advantage of the fact that people have their windows down or are proffering money or you know, something of that regard, and they are then unfortunately taken advantage of. So there is also that which we have to look at in terms of saying, you know, we need constraints. But I mean, I love the fact that we are entertained at our traffic lights.
Look, I mean, it makes the city unique, it makes the country unique, and as I say, I mean, I have bigger aspirations for South Africa's youth than to juggle or dance on beer crates at traffic lights. I think we should be making sure we get more sort of accountants, artisans, the whole lot, but that's another conversation for another day. What is the next step in terms of this issue, particularly maybe this hair salon, but also for street vendors in Greater Sandton?
Unfortunately, bylaw management, well, from my side, bylaw management hasn't been as active as I would have liked in the Sandton area. We had a big meeting with the JMPD department, which handled bylaw management, and we are stepping up in securing areas. With St. John's and the Barber, I had a meeting with the church the other day, and they are wanting to step up and actually help him because it's the business that he does to support his kid who's going through university. So they are going to look at how they can assist with a license and take it as a community project from within the church, which I think is really, really good. He's just going to have to find, he can't be on the corner. I went through all the trade stuff with them, and they're going to investigate how they're going to help him. But unfortunately, bylaw management, I've spoken about it, one broken window and, you know, the broken window system is, if we let one go, another one happens. If we let another one go, another one happens. And then suddenly our streets are full, as Martin mentioned, street signs. We've got the mothers and children at robots, which is illegal. It is a syndicate, and you can't tell the difference. But we also have to let people trade and make money. So it's a catch-22.
Well, it sounds like an interesting fine balance, and I like the idea of adopting a small business. I saw this done quite successfully as I was growing up in Greater Sandton. I know at the bus stop I used to get off from my way back from school, there used to be a gentleman who used to fix shoes and make shoes and do all kinds of things with shoes on the side of the road. And the bank that was adjacent to this bus stop decided to adopt him and built him a proper structure within the sort of the bank's perimeters. He ran that successful business for quite some time and eventually then retired. And I think the structure is still standing there. But it was early days in terms of street hawkers. But Linda, I know we still wanted to chat about some interesting developments in the Bryanston Refuge side, but maybe we can get you back next week and have that conversation. Linda Shackelford, Johannesburg Ward 103 Councillor and Public Relations Councillor, Martin Lowe, Section 79 Economic Development Committee member. Good to have you on the Sandton Times Hour. It's the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a quick musical break, and more of the Sandton Times Hour right after this.
For more,
the Sandton Times Hour continues.
Welcome to the second half of the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and also available on all good digital audio platforms wherever you are in the world. I'm Alexander Leipner, and that was James Lacey with Sweet Like Chocolate, which is a great way to round off the Easter celebrations and all the chocolates you hopefully had. If you caught something intriguing during the show but missed all the details this week, don't worry, you can hop onto the sandtontimes.co.za and explore the comprehensive show notes that we always put up with a bit of a breakdown, some links, some further reading, and all those good things that you've become used to. And also don't forget to connect with the Sandton Times on social media at Sandton Times. So if you're on TikTok, Instagram, X, Facebook, whatever your platform, pick one and make sure that you get in touch. And you can also reach out on there with a tweet or a message or a DM or whatever suits you.
As we get into the second half of this week's show, I'm quite excited about this next interview because I think it's quite an interesting conversation point, because I was quite excited to see this particular development rise out of the earth of Sandton. And as many of you might know who've been in Sandton for many, many years, it used to be part of the civic grounds of Sandton. There used to be a civic building when we used to have a mayor back in the days. And there used to be a horse there. I think it belonged to Toyota that used to stand there. There was a fountain and all of that is gone. And what is there now is literally the Sandton Cowtrain station and a couple of shops and the hopes of a big development. And at the time when it opened, I took a walk around. There was a very eager leasing agent who took me around and could sort of tell me that something was going to happen, but he couldn't tell me exactly what was going to happen and who was going to move in, etc., etc. To cut a long story short, what was going to be Kahora Central ended up being a bit of a colourful tale of the Guptas and a whole bunch of other things that happened with the city of Joburg. But I'm going to fast track beyond that because we've kind of moved through that entire chapter. And this property where the Sandton Gautrain station is now has come up for sale again through an auction. And here to chat to me about that is Norman Radd. He's the CEO of Brol Auctions. And Norman, it's good to have you on the Sandton Times Hour.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Yeah. And yes, it's not an auction. It's a tender, just for clarity purposes.
Okay. Well, there you have it, Norman. That's why I've got you on the show, because you're going to give me all the details around this. But Norman, let's quickly do a small little rewind. This is a property that was previously owned by what was going to be Regiment's Capital or going to be Kahora Central. What makes this probably one of the most valuable properties in South Africa?
Well, I would say that it's the most valuable or iconic position in Africa. I mean, it's like ground zero. It's there right next to Sandton City, often known as the capital of Africa, where people come and shop, and the destination of certainly the most popular destination of Nelson Mandela Square, of Sandton, of Johannesburg, and possibly of Africa. A lot of people are traveling here. When they do come to South Africa, they most certainly are going past the Nelson Mandela Square. Obviously, the other parts of the country, which is also beautiful. But when it comes to commercial, you are definitely passing the Nelson Mandela Square.
Yeah. And I remember the initial plans had some very ambitious ideas. I mean, apartments, there was going to be retail shops, another sort of piazza style setup with a walkway into Nelson Mandela Square. The whole thing was going to kind of synergize and fuse. Are those plans still on the table as part of this sale? Or is it pretty much up to the person who takes over this property what they want to make of it?
Let me give you the outline of the process and then it'll explain what we actually are selling. So originally, with all good intents and purposes, the idea was really great. I mean, some great designs, commercial buildings, residential buildings. I mean, I know for a fact that when the residential apartment blocks were launched, over 65%, they had sales on them. You know, it also came at a very difficult time when the country started taking a bit of a downturn. We won't go into that detail because I don't think I'm in a position to discuss that. But things happened not for the worse, not for the better. And unfortunately, we found ourselves in this situation. But the plan originally was about 200,000 square meters of bulk developable on the site, which with mixed use that would flow into Sandton Square through by the library there. And what we are selling on behalf of the liquidator is the site, which is about 4 hectares in size. It's got certain limitations and servitudes regarding the car train and the height on certain areas of the property, kind of blends in with where it goes through to Sandton Square. The existing sale is for based on the existing developable rights and plan that needs to go ahead. However, what we've been receiving, because times have changed and over the landscape has changed, and certainly Sandton, the whole area in Sandton has changed. I mean, commercial properties has really seen a massive downturn with offices, you know, lots of vacancies, over 600,000 square meters of vacancies. There is a turn back of positivity. I think it's decreasing now and we've seen some movement, but it's going to take a long time. So I think the whole plan needs to be re-looked at, and all the people, the investors and the developers that are interested have done so with the intention of having a new development plan approved by the city. So it is in liquidation. There are creditors, one, two, three main creditors, and a number of other creditors that need to be looked after. But the main thing is that there is a development plan that's going to be proposed by the new developers, which needs to be considered on behalf of the city, which will enhance and change the landscape of the area. And the other little caveat in the deal, I think, that was happening was that there was a 50-year lease with a possible extension of another 50-year lease with the city. There has been proposals from most of the developers to convert that leasehold sale into a proper freehold sale, because that would just make it easier to transfer the residential rights on the property and the sectional title rights on the property.
You mentioned it's not an auction, and you corrected me on that, and thank you for doing that. So how does this process work if it's not an auction?
So we have a data room where you can download all your information. You need to get your fee card and all who you are, and you basically register. Once you have done that, you sign all the relevant NDAs, and then you start the process where you can download all the relevant information. We've got lots of information on that in the data room pertaining to the original development plan, the existing rights, and everything that goes on with the existing development and the site. Then once that happens, you need to propose or put a proposal in, and you have to have proof of funding. So there was an extension granted for parties because they just needed a bit more time because of the December holidays and everyone coming back to work over that period. It was basically a non-working month, and they've requested for an extension. So the whole of March, April basically has been extended, March to April the 6th.
Okay. And opportunities like this, do you find that you see only South African developers, or is there also international interest in a piece of land?
No,
like this?
So our job was to make sure we went out to the international world. We try to get as much marketing out there as possible. We approach the Middle East investors, the Emiratis, and we've got very good contacts with a lot of the people that did developments in Dubai. I think the unfortunate situation is the stability of our country at the moment and where we are with regards to our currency. I mean, we've seen our currency depreciate by 25% over the last couple of 18 months. People are bringing in money and see further depreciation. When they start taking it out, it's not a good return. So the other thing I wanted to say is, it's quite funny, is that the parties and the investors overseas see this as too small of an investment.
Sure.
they're looking for multi-billion dollar investments, So we've approached some massive companies in the Middle East, and because the currency is so weak, they just find that it's just too small of a development to make any significant return. So unfortunately, we're in that situation. But I think there are enough really quality buyers or developers and parties in South Africa that see this as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to get stuck in and to do something significant and actually change the landscape of Sandton City and maybe possibly the capital of Africa. I repeat that because I think it is.
Yeah. I mean, Norn, you've got some good experience in this field and also in this particular area. What implications might the sale of the Sandton property have on the broader real estate market, particularly in terms of investor confidence or even future or extended developments in the area?
Johannesburg, Sandton, residential, we've seen a negative trend. I think it's starting to stabilize and we're starting to see a bit of the prices reaching a bottom, bottoming out, but there's still a bit of properties for sales. We haven't seen the growth that we would like to have seen in the high-end residential, but I don't think that this is necessarily going to be all in high-end. I think there's still a shortage of housing across the board, and I think if the product is right, mixed with some good retail, and that blends itself and flows nicely into the Sandton City, into the Sandton Square. I think everyone wants to be in a good precinct. I mean, you just take other buildings now. I mean, I understand that, the Discovery Building, we talk about buildings, beautiful building in Sandton. I believe that, it was a lot of vacancy and it's really been turning around because people like to work in a working environment where there's so much more to offer them, just residential, just commercial, or just retail. And I think that's what this site lends itself to bring in something as a lifestyle and an experience. And I think there isn't really much of that in Sandton. I think it'll do really well. And I think the prices maybe around are being a bit suppressed, but I think they're going to start increasing. I think with a new development, I think there'll be a lot of uptake. The most important part of it all, it sits on the Gautrain. So, you know, if you're traveling and it's a one-stop destination, you get out of your Gautrain and you walk into your apartment, you go do the shopping. And so I think the developers know that and they see that. And I think this is really going to be something exciting and for us to see evolve over the next and develop over the next couple of months and years.
Well, there you have it. Norman Radd, he's the CEO of Brawl Auctions. They're talking about that piece of land in the middle of Sandton, in the heart of Africa's richest square mile, there where the Gautrain Sandton station is. And yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to be with me on the Sandton Times Hour. Well, we're going to take a quick musical break and more of the Sandton Times Hour right after this.
Connect with the Sandton Times. Email editor@santontimes.co.za.
This is the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8. And yeah, send us an email. Where is that email? I've been looking the whole hour. And I think I got a couple, but not. I didn't get one from you. You listening right now, I haven't received yours. So send an email. We're heading into the final minutes of this week's show. And that was Hard Lights, Moonshine, and Marnik featuring Ember Island. How many people do they need to make a song? These days, it feels like there's four or five people involved in making one song. Surely, what happened to the days where there was just one person and we just had one name, like Madonna or Elvis? Now there's just a whole neighborhoods involved in making a song. Anyway, they made a song called Umbrella, which you just heard, and that was a new take on Rihanna's hit. Remember that? Good song. This past week, Discovery Bank and Visa released their latest Spend Trend 24 report, a comprehensive study of consumer spending habits. And this latest report is based on over 13 billion transactions made on more than 60 million credit cards from 14 cities around the world, including three South African cities, five emerging market cities, and six developed market cities from 2019 to 2023. I caught up with Hilton Kellner, CEO of Discovery Bank, at the big reveal of the data, and to chat to him about some of the findings.
So Spend Trend 24 is an incredibly interesting analysis, a deep analytical data exercise of how South Africans spend their money, how much they spend, and how they spend. So really looking at the kind of the real detail of spending behaviors across South Africa, across the different cities, and then we've compared that to global counterparts. So it gives us a benchmark against which to compare.
What stood out for you personally when you looked at the data? What are some of your highlights?
So the resilience of South African consumers is notable. I mean, we've had a difficult time, particularly with interest rates in South Africa increasing over the last year. We expected to see consumer spending be under pressure, and that is the case, and it's particularly the case kind of in the mass market, where you see interest rates have had the biggest impact. But in other segments, you see continued growth, continued resilience. You see travel continuing to really kind of drive the economy in many areas, and that's been a phenomenon that's continued post-COVID. We've seen a significant shift towards digital wallets, digital banking. That is kind of a global leading position that South Africa has, and it reflects just, I think, the significance of digital banking and our financial services industry, which is really, really strong and sophisticated.
I think it's certainly something that stood out is how strong South Africa competes in terms of technology, in terms of the banking system. One of the other things you also mentioned is how revenge travel has calmed down. I know it was a big buzz term as we came out of lockdown. People just wanted to get out of their house and go wherever it was at the best price and as luxurious as possible. That has now significantly sort of calmed down again and come back to some sort of normality. Yeah,
yeah. So travel's moderated, but it's moderated at the level post-COVID. So kind of while we saw a significant increase and a bounce back after COVID and that kind of revenge travel phenomenon that you referred to, we've seen travel then continue and be sustained at that higher level. So it's not as if it's dropping off at all. And what we are seeing, which is really encouraging for South Africans, is that domestic travel is more affordable than international travel. And kind of the ability to explore our country remains real. And that's something that we think is really, really good.
I also loved how you pointed out that the Rugby World Cup had a massive impact on your data and that France came up as the number one destination, which is very pleasing to hear. You also mentioned, talking about travel, that people are driving further for longer when it comes to some of the trends you're seeing in terms of commute to office and home.
Yeah, so we We capture about 2 to 3 billion kilometers a year of data through our Discovery Insure business. We analyze how people, how South Africans are driving and their driving behavior. And we've seen a return to office in the main, where now about 75% of people who are working in the office are there 3 days a week. And that's resulting in a slightly longer commute. And kind of the effect of the fuel price increases that we've seen over the last year is material in that context. So it's kind of it's crowding out some of the other spend that we've seen, and people are definitely driving more.
There's quite a bit of spend in online entertainment as well. I think you highlighted how online shopping, streaming, both music and movies has become a big thing. That's also quite a bit of money that's leaving the country as well, in terms of being banked in other territories. Is that something that is concerning in one way or another?
So I think it just reflects the kind of the global phenomenon of kind of entertainment, and how entertainment is globalized today. And South Africans are accessing that content more and more, and you can see that coming through. And it tends to be agnostic of age category or family size. You know, the kind of the value proposition of the streaming services is clear, and entertainment online is really a growth sector. So I don't think we're any different to other markets. It just simply reflects the fact that South Africans are tapping into kind of these global trends.
I mean, apart from a fascinating read, how are you going to be using this data as Discovery Bank in terms of your planning and where you're going to be using this in the next 12 months?
So it helps us craft our products and our services to clients. It certainly helps us to kind of set the agenda internally for the way that we think about digital wallets and digital payments and how we can support our clients better for that. So watch the space and you'll see some of the new kind of product developments that we launch over the rest of this year, reflecting the trends that we've shown you today in Spend Trend 24.
Well, that was Hilton Kellner. He's the CEO of Discovery Bank, talking about the Spend Trend 24 report. And if you want to get some more information or more details on that report, we're going to have them up on www.santontimes.co.za. And of course, the hot tip you've all been waiting for. Well, what does the data say about travel and getting the cheapest flight? Well, let me reveal that to you. 5:55 a.m. on a Sunday morning. I kid you not. So either you're an early riser, maybe you're into cycling or gym or something, and you're going to be up at that time, or we come straight from the club and get on a plane and fly somewhere. So 5:55 a.m. on a Sunday morning, if you're into bargains, that's the one to get. I think that's all we have time for this week on the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8, and as always, available as a podcast on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, all those good things. Any leading digital audio platform, go and subscribe. Email editor at santontimes.co.za if you want to get in touch, or connect on social media at Santon Times, and visit the website www.santontimes.co.za, and feel free to send through your questions, comments, feedback, input, all of those things. Very much welcome, and we try and read as many as fast as possible. Thank you to all our guests who made the time to be on the show this week, and Vincenzo as well. Thank you to you for being behind the mixing desk again. And of course, the Santon Times team and everyone at Mix 93.8. Let's wrap up the show this week, and that's to play out with Harry Styles and Watermelon Sugar. Thank you for listening, and let's do it again next week.